Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respect to elders past and present and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be listening today. Welcome to The Gays Are Revolting, a definitive weekly news source for contemporary gays.
We put the G in LGBTQIA+, and we're here to help you be the best G you can be.
You can follow us on Instagram at Gays Revolting Pod, or join our Facebook group at The Gays Are Revolting.
Access our weekly after show at patreon.com/gaysrevoltingpod, and buy the last remaining tickets to our Melbourne live show on July 19th.
And Dr. George is returning soon, so send in your questions relating to mental, physical and sexual health by the 28th of July.
That's right, you can DM us on socials or email gaysrevolting@lipmedia.com and let us know if you'd like to remain anonymous. Now, we're missing Mikey tonight because it is his anniversary, so that's a fair excuse. It's 1 year anniversary, which
happy
is
anniversary.
Very adorable. Happy Annie. But we are joined by the second most hated character to come out of South Africa after after Chris Lilly's lesbian pet psychic. It's Kyle Dowsett. And of course, to my right, it's that kid that bullied all the nerds at high school, but now, ironically, prefers to stay in playing video games and can't hold down a relationship. It's Luke. And me, everybody's favourite granny comedian.
Oh yes.
How are we, boys?
Hi, it's been so long.
2 weeks.
It's so strange to be back.
It's very weird.
And although exactly the
You've
same.
You've aged.
Yeah.
Thank you. Oh my god.
Still the same. Mikey's not here.
Oh. Oof. What have we been up to?
I went to a Royal Art exhibition in Bendigo.
Is that what you're doing? I was like, what the fuck are you doing on your story? I had no idea.
I went to an exhibition of royal portraits and I had a really good time.
Such an old lady thing to do. It was nice to see art on Instagram that didn't have someone shirtless standing in front of it.
Yeah, I did try that, but they asked me to put my shirt back on.
Oh, boy. Yeah,
it was very fun. Hang out with you.
Oh, yeah. I went to Granny Bingo last night. It was a lot of fun. I brought some friends who'd never been.
And didn't see you for 2 weeks, like, which was probably
really
the highlight.
Nice.
Yeah.
Would you call it the pit or the peak?
Definitely my peak. What did you get up to?
I had a great couple of weeks. I moved house.
What?
A house. Yeah, I know.
I didn't know you were moving house.
Did you tell us that?
I keep my cards close to my chest. Oh. A house sat for my boss and then accidentally
moved in.
Yeah, well, basically, I changed the locks on the apartment and she can now no longer get in. That's a whole nother story.
Whoa.
I did discover I have the ability to come multiple times.
Oh.
Up to three so far.
In a year?
No. Oh. At a time. And I'm practicing.
Oh.
So my when you talk about coming multiple times, do you mean like fire one after the other? Or do you mean like you can come, stay hard and then...
Yes.
10 minutes later. Yeah, I can
the
do
second
that.
Thing. But I never knew I could do that before.
Good.
So I feel like I wasted my slot at the high school talent show 15 years ago.
That's how you really get your money's worth at WET. You don't even waste time getting soft and having to get hard again.
But I feel like it's a new chapter of my life.
It's beautiful.
Knuckle down for the next couple of years.
I got a CT scan, which isn't very exciting after I've just been watching Chernobyl and there's like radiation and stuff. I'm like, I'm definitely dying now. But yeah, I've been sick for 3 months with nasal crap, so that's why I sound like this.
Listeners, this isn't his normal voice.
Yeah, this isn't my normal. I'm not normally Fran Drescher.
I think it's got anything to do with the amount of visits you do to Poof Doof.
No, because I don't go with you.
Oh, doctors, we're all hot messes. But here we are. We're back and we're ready for another episode. And I'm very excited because we have got an interview coming up with Harriet Shing, who is, of course, a parliamentary secretary for mental health, equality and creative industries, and also the first out lesbian parliamentary parliamentarian in the Victorian state government. So very exciting chat we're going
to
be having.
It'll be nice to have a woman on this show.
I know.
And also, it is our first week back, but just a reminder, if you sign up for our Patreon, we actually had 5 after shows.
Oh, yay. Yeah.
Already.
Listen to our backlog.
Quick.
Catch up on, or if you already subscribed, this is just another week. How crazy is that? We organize that pretty well. To be completely honest, not in 1,000 years did I ever think I would be on a podcast that was like internationally successful and I would be discussing the political leanings of Taylor Swift. That was not in my life plans, but here we are.
Here we are.
It's been pretty hard to avoid online, especially if you follow Tom. But T Swizzle dropped
her name.
Yeah, her Christian name.
Yes.
Dropped a new single right in the middle of Pride Month, so pretty apt time to do it. It was a LGBT anthem, or a pride anthem, a lot of people are calling it, along with a video which garnered a lot of views in a very short amount of time. You need to calm down.
Don't tell me what to do.
It was notable almost immediately because it featured a lot of LGBTQIA+ sort of personalities and celebrities. It had amazing production values. Executive stunning. Produced by Todrick Hole, my least favorite judge of RuPaul's Drag
Race.
He's
so scary.
But it did open up a lot of questions about why now, what was the intent behind it, and questions on how to be a good ally to the LGBT community.
Yeah.
My own personal thoughts on it is I don't like Taylor Swift, and I never stand for Taylor Swift, and I don't think I ever will, because something just intrinsically in me just recoils from, you know, just the image of blonde, white privilege. It's not interesting to me. So I'm not a huge fan. I haven't hated on her or like sent any snake emojis to her or anything like that. So
the whole thing.
I'm not in either camp when it comes to...
You just camp all by yourself.
Yeah, I know. I was like, waiting for that.
But when I saw this, and also with the news that she performed a free gig at Stonewall the day after the release of it to about 100 patrons just at the bar to sort of really solidify.
They're all standing there going, this is the worst Taylor Swift drag queen I've ever seen.
Yeah, I don't think anyone knew what was going on. God. I was strangely not bothered by this. Yeah. And I get bothered by...
I would really think you would be.
Yeah.
So you're not bothered by the song?
I get bothered by white people doing a lot of things.
Yeah, but this weirdly isn't one.
This weirdly was not one of them.
Oh, I'm fascinating.
From what I'd seen on Twitter from the queens that cameoed in the video, everyone
They got paid well, didn't they?
Looked after really well, paid really well, and she's put her money where her mouth is at the end of the day.
Well, this is the thing, and I think you're going to have to educate me on it a little bit. As I've said before, like, I have paid no attention to the personal lives of any pop stars since 1985.
Yeah.
And know very little about Taylor Swift. But basically, correct me if I'm wrong, she was being criticized for not doing enough for her queer audience, then made a song.
She does something.
Hired a queer person of color to direct it.
Yeah.
And then a whole lot of wonderful people from the whole LGBT rainbow. And then
the gays are like, no, don't do that,
said,
please.
Actually, no, we don't want it.
It's called the gay catch 22. Yeah. And I do it all the time, which is like, give me visibility, give me your money, and give me your attention. But as soon as I get any of those three things, I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Do not fucking talk to me.
Yeah. Boy.
Taylor Swift is a unique case because I think so much of her public persona is tied up in reputation. And
like the album?
Exactly. And her perceived persona. So, like, not to go all Britney Spears from a few episodes. The narrative of Taylor Swift is she was the all-American sweetheart.
Yeah.
She did like this like pop country sort of conservative music anyone could like, and presented herself as the sweet girl is friends with anyone. The narrative quickly changed that, no, this person's actually a total bitch.
It has flip-flopped quite a bit.
And then that sort of...
Is this when she stole Katy Perry's dances, or is this later in the piece?
Wait, who was the one that got into trouble for not paying drag queens? Was that Katy Perry? Remember, someone wanted to hire all the drag queens for the music video, and then it was a big error because they weren't being paid.
Every other person.
Oh, probably. Yeah, anyway.
And that was her narrative for a while. And then I feel like she's in this new stage where she's the self-referential Taylor Swift. So all of her music videos are sort of poking fun at the fact that people think she's a total bitch.
Right.
And the snake imagery from all the snake emojis she got sent. And,
right.
And it's all just extremely calculated. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a there'd be a news story and then there'll be a sort of tongue-in-cheek music video.
Can't say she's not smart.
Album campaign. So when you operate your whole career like that and create an image through those sort of means, it's hard not to question when you do something genuine, like donate $113,000 to an LGBT.
Yeah. Did she do that?
Organization, yes.
To GLAAD?
It was to the Tennessee Equality Project.
Right, okay.
They're fighting legislations around religious discrimination, funnily enough.
And she got like 200K plus signatures for the Equality Act.
Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the criticism also wasn't it that people thought that she wasn't speaking for the gay community or to the gay community because she didn't want to alienate her religious far right.
Yeah.
Because she's from like the South, right? So like all country folk.
Well, if she's putting money into
and
that,
that's always been
thing,
her biggest
it?
Market, I think. Yeah. So like, now she's leaving that and she's targeting the gays. But I mean, the gays have always liked her.
Obviously not Luke. I have no idea who
a lot
she
of
is.
Gays so, have always liked her.
I feel like that ultra-conservative market left her a while ago.
Yeah.
And I think that's some of the questioning here is like, if this person is a marketing genius that is really tuned into this and saw that the conservatives were leaving anyway because she's making Bad Blood and these upbeat pop songs, why not shift focus onto the growing gay demographic and teen girls who are just getting into RuPaul's Drag Race anyway? Because the drag queens featured were all from RuPaul's girls. You know, why not shift focus over there and sort of capitalize on the new market, because the conservatives aren't buying your music anyway.
She writes her own music, doesn't she?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you really think it's all just about money? Like, surely she's got enough money now that she can...
I like her songs. I don't really care for her as like a person. Like, I don't really, not drawn to any of her personality traits. I think she's a bit daggy, but like, I do like bopping around to her songs in club, and like, I think she's got some hits. Yeah, I really don't see the problem with this. I think people are complaining about the wrong things. We've got so much bigger things to focus on in the world and actual enemies to focus on. So I think it's weird that we're treating her like the enemy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably more the thing that I'm thinking is like, okay, yeah, you can watch this and think it's a bit tacky, or you can think it's a marketing ploy or something like that.
Like, it's doing good anyway.
Is it, is Taylor Swift our enemy?
She's not.
And I don't think Taylor Swift's the one that we need to be worried about.
I still think these conversations are worth having.
The
ultimate question is,
but
how
just the way that some people reacted to it, I expected to watch it and see swastikas.
Yeah, you're right.
I think the thing that people get the most hurt about is that there are actually a lot of queer musicians and artists struggling to have the same platform for you know, the same sort of message. They put out pride singles and songs about very much the same topics, but don't get this same attention that someone like Taylor Swift would, because unfortunately there's just not enough of the pie to go around for everyone to have a slice. It's honestly true. And a lot of the Twitter noise that I've been seeing is, historically, there has been this appropriation of our culture by white female pop stars.
Absolutely. And had she have just not got a queer person of color and a whole lot of queer people on the video clip, it could have very much become her taking over and appropriating, and if she just hired actors to be the drag queens or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think that touch of actually getting the community involved in the video and stuff is a nice touch. And more than a lot of other pop stars have done.
Absolutely. I think a real question here is intent.
Yeah.
People have questions about the intent.
Think,
and we'll never know. The only person that really knows is
Todrick Hall.
T-Swizzle. So we can only hypothesize whether it's evil or not. But at the end of the day, we got the cash money. And a lot of queer artists got the cash money to appear in it. So I personally have no issue with it. But I do respect someone saying, these white girls have come into my living room before and told me how to do pride, and I don't want any part of it. And I'm going to say, cool.
I think,
It also raises, you raise a good point there as well about just on a broader scale, straight people at pride or pride events or gay bars and that sort of thing. You know, obviously a lot of them are allies, but there are people that come along to pride events for a party without really acknowledging what the purpose of that event is.
Pose has a really interesting like little scene about this, because season two of Pose kickstarts with the release of Vogue by Madonna. Right. And so these trans people of color basically mm-hmm. saying, this is great, we're in the mainstream now, we're going to mm-hmm. have all these opportunities. And it's Billy Porter's character that said, no, this happens every couple of years or mm-hmm. so. Everyone wants to be a part of the party.
Yeah.
People want to come to our parties, but they don't want to stick around for the fight.
Yeah, right.
And that's why you will see them come and do their Vogue and this will go off chops, but they won't stick around. I think it's timely that that show posed that discussion at this time, because I think that's also a fear with this and with the meteoric rise of Drag Race into the mainstream as well. It's like, are these people and these allies around for the party?
Yeah.
Or are they around for the long haul?
Because I am 100% there for the ones that are around for the party. Yeah. And there are a lot that are.
I don't think there's any perfect way to support the LGBT plus community. And I feel like people get really hung up on certain aspects. Like, there's no piece of entertainment or music or art that has LGBT themes that hasn't been criticized by the gays. Like, they always focus on something and there's no room for imperfect support. So then we like lose all the support that we do have because people just want it to be...
We attack the people that are trying. Yeah. So, but then there is also like, I think the perfect way to be an ally, a straight ally, is to not make it about yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I think is maybe perhaps what people feel Taylor was getting, just to bring it back to that as well. Mm-hmm. But even, you know, people on the streets at Mardi Gras or at gay bars or whatever, remember that you're not there for it to be about you.
Exactly.
It's about the LGBTI people. Yeah. And have fun by all means and that sort of stuff. But remember, it's about the people that don't get to have the privilege you have in the rest of your life.
Yeah, straight pride fuckers.
It's like it's a bit of a strong stance to take, but the message I really like is being an ally does not make you a part of the LGBT. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
So it you're not a part of that community.
It's a privilege.
It's like being in a relationship. You cannot give support to someone with an expectation of something in return. Mm-hmm. Then it's not support. You're just actually transactionally. Mm. So for me, being an ally, the best way for me personally to be an ally to the LGBT community is knowing that there are certain experiences that you would never have comprehension of. Your support doesn't ingrate you into the community as part of the community. You're welcome, obviously. Yeah. We're not going to kick you out of
a bar. But I think people also need to recognize that there are certain spaces that aren't for them and they need to accept that. I know we wouldn't go to a really butch lesbian bar. Like, that's their space.
Yes, I would.
I think Tom would.
I feel like there are certain spaces, like within the LGBT community, that are very kind of sacred and there's only like specific kind of people that would like to go there. They like to feel safe and within their own.
It's about respect.
Well, there are spaces like, that are designed
For straight allies and stuff. Like, there's like the happy family event, parades, things like that. But then again, you wouldn't be like coming to wet.
Well, even then, there's an argument, like, because they're now saying that, you know, we should be making the bears put more clothes on and they shouldn't be in their harnesses and jock straps going down the street. It's like, well, no, fuck off, because they're the people that were doing
you're
it
for
in
that.
There. Yeah. Don't bring your kid if your kid can't see a bear in a jock strap and a harness. So yeah, I see sort of what you're saying in that respect, and there are sort of places that are specifically designed that might be for women, or you know, sex on site premises is for men that sort of exclude people from being able to go into those specific places. But generally, pride and pride events and our general bars and bookshops and that sort of thing, I think that any ally is welcome to come there as long as they realize that they're there as an ally to support us and it's not about them.
Because it is, it's like my favorite thing to see at pride parades when you see kids on people's backs and waving rainbow flags.
I was
going to
say naked bears.
I love a naked bear.
Well, you should come around and see me getting out of the shower.
Oh, God. But yeah, no, I love seeing families and seeing that kind of support, because I know a lot of people think like, oh, is this for me? Should I be at this thing? Because I'm not gay myself. But it is so important to be seen.
Oh, it's
supporting
wonderful.
The people you love. I don't want that to ever have to change or come into question.
No.
I do want to say, just following up on what you said before, that I think specifically gay men having a lot of critical discourse and a lot of critical conversations about our representation and our visibility online and the acts of straight allies, etc., is really important. And I wouldn't like to frame it in a negative light. Like, obviously some people take it too far and just say some nasty shit. But I've always felt as a community, we're still figuring out our boundaries and we haven't had a lot of representation for a very long time.
So, we haven't had any mainstream allies until the last few decades. So, it's a very new thing.
So, these conversations are actually fundamental for figuring out the nuts and bolts. We didn't know half of what we know now, just like 5-10 years ago. And we know that because of the people complaining and the people coming for people who did try to support and said, actually, you did it wrong. You done fucked up. So I absolutely think, you know, some people call it cancel culture or whatever, but I think it's really important because it helps us define what is
I absolutely believe those conversations are very, very important. But I just don't want people to lose sight of who the real enemies are.
Yeah, and I don't want people to not try because of fear of failure.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
We're so happy to have Parliamentary Secretary for Mental Health, Equality and Creative Industries, Harriet Shing, joining us. Also the first out lesbian parliamentarian for the state. Harriet, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me. It's lovely to be here.
Welcome. So nice to have you here. Now, you've just come from the inaugural Gippsland Pride Gala, and you were the patron?
Yes, the most extraordinary collection of events and people from not just the Gippsland region, but we had people travelling from interstate to celebrate.
Lovely.
And it was just a tour de force. There was a real groundswell of community support for our LGBTIQA plus friends, colleagues, workmates, family members, and the Pride initiative was about three events. There was an insanely robust roller derby Pride Cup between the gender bending story on the one hand and the Gippsland Rangers roller derby team on the other.
That's essential.
And that was, it was absolutely, it was just off the chart. So, and the longer they go around the rink, I don't even know if it's called
a rink.
It's called a rink now. The longer they go around it, the more aggressive it becomes.
Oh.
So people were watching this initially quite friendly match turn into
bloodbath.
Well, it was. It was a great way for everyone to release a bit of tension and to showcase the sport of roller derby, which obviously is enjoying a really strong renaissance in recent years, and not just because of Drew Barrymore and Alan Page. That's right. We also had a community forum at Warragul, which was attended by about 150 people from local businesses, industry and organisations and community groups to talk about what Pride looks like and what it means to connect with people from our communities across the region and how to identify and recognise and respect our LGBTIQA plus folk and make the changes that, that we need and deserve in everyday life to feel included and part of community. And then the final event was the Gippsland Pride Gala, which was 380 people dressed to the nines. It was just, there were so many sequins that I'm quite sure they could be seen from space.
Amazing. It's so important to have these events in rural areas for people. But did you also see like a lot of straight allies coming along to
absolutely
join in as well? That's great.
And that was very much a continuation of the theme in Gippsland after the marriage equality Community Postal mm-hmm. Survey when it was actually really so hard for so many of us to go through that public campaign, not just here in the city, but also all the way around Victoria and especially so in the smaller country towns.
To be honest, we've talked about it a lot before. A lot of the time I found myself just going out to a gay bar to be around other people that were going through the same thing during that thing. And imagine being in an area where that you don't have a Smith Street or something like that, where you can just go and find other people to be with.
Well, we had the most amazing variety of small events and shows of solidarity crop up throughout that campaign. So one of the things that did happen was there were so many conversations with people in Gippsland showing support and solidarity. And even though the local member federally, Russell Broadbent, was one of a number of people to actually vote no, even though we returned a yes vote of above 62%, the solidarity around allies and that cavalry coming over the hill to send us way over and above that 50% was absolutely magical. So that really did tap into a series of those conversations that started, and the sky hasn't fallen in. It's simply been made more vibrant with the rainbows of upcoming nuptials.
Yeah. We've still got Christmas. Christmas still exists as well.
Yes, yeah, we're going to ban
We'll see what we can do about that.
I know, that's right. Let's see. And the Tooth Fairy's okay because she dresses well and she's one of ours. But it's a really hard set of conversations to have, that simply because we're making the world more equal, that it creates a great sense of being threatened or intimidated from those who think that that comes at a cost.
Yeah.
And we had, I mean, for example, our recently re-elected Prime Minister saying on International Women's Day by analogy this year that, this is to paraphrase, he's all in favour of equality for women as long as it doesn't come at the expense of anybody else. And I was thinking, well, that sort of defeats the purpose if you don't understand the difference between equity and equality.
I think it's interesting too when people have been in a position of power, it's a conversation they haven't had to have for, you know, a majority of their existence.
Oh, and like those people who say, wait, when is the
straight pride?
And where can I find the men's room? And that's right.
Yeah,
and
in my day, there were only two genders.
It's this line I keep thinking of is like...
Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve.
Yeah, yeah, these people have been having a slightly difficult time for a very short amount of time as well. And it's kind of up to us to guide them through that as well.
There aren't any gays in our community. That's one of my favourite ones.
That was Kata, wasn't it?
It's so many people. It's so many people.
I love it when Kata did it and then his brother came out. Anyway, we should get started with your interview. This has been fascinating, though. I'm love Gippsland. It's a beautiful area.
I'm so excited that there's a pride event. We have microbreweries and an amazing performing arts centre that's just opened up. They do everything from steam rail through to agricultural show. We have amazing exhibitions. A
really good lolly shop in Foster, I know that.
There is a great lolly shop in Foster, you're absolutely right. And the amazing discoveries that exist in Gippsland. So if you want cheese, I'm just going to put it right out there. We've got cheese.
Do you have a code that our listeners can use? I thought first, like some of our listeners may need a bit of an introduction. Reading over this, mental health, equality and creative industries sounds like my Saturday night. But for our listeners, could you maybe let us know in a sort of tangible way what your role
absolutely
encapsulates? Is that a word?
It is a word. Yeah.
Thank you.
You know, but even if it weren't a word, I probably would have just picked it up and run with it anyway. I'm all for a language that evolves organically. So if that happens on my end as well, please indulge me in the same way.
You've been invented a lot of words on the show.
So as a parliamentary secretary, I work really closely with Minister Martin Foley, who has long been a champion of equality and worked really hard in his work as Australia's first equality minister. The gender inequality work that he has done, including in establishing Australia's first gender and sexuality commissioner in Roe Allen, in establishing the funding for the new Pride Centre, the work associated with ending conversion and banning those practices, the apology for historical homosexual convictions, and all of the work associated with the Pride 40th anniversary, which is coming up and which will be the most incredible set of celebrations. As a parliamentary secretary. I assist him with that work. And last term, for example, when we were elected in 2014 and I was elected as a new member of parliament, I was the ambassador for the state's the Safe Schools program, a little program some of you may have heard of. And we successfully implemented that in every government secondary school. And this is without a doubt a program which is changing the dynamic around resources and tools for teachers, for staff, for students to have a more inclusive and supportive environment for same-sex attracted and gender diverse people that they know. Mm-hmm. So it's not part of the curriculum, which is something that came up time and time again as one of the misinformation and mythology campaigns we heard a lot about in certain newspapers and on certain radio stations. But as Parliamentary Secretary for Creative Industries and for Mental Health, I do an awful lot of work working alongside the Minister and alongside the work of the Mental Health Royal Commission, which is based on the model that we established with the Family Violence Royal Commission. There's been an awful lot of work to have these very open and often very difficult conversations at a community level and with government around our mental health system and the way in which the lived experience of too many Victorians, so many of whom are not here because they have taken their own lives, is something that has to change. We have a suicide rate which is twice that of the road toll. And what I would also encourage anyone listening to do is to call Lifeline if you do experience any difficulty in listening to this part of the conversation or indeed any of the work that's coming up in the Family Violence Royal Commission. So that's 13, 11, 14. The work that goes on, though, around mental health is much more than looking at only the treatment elements of the system. It's also about prevention. It's about early intervention. It's about looking at different cohorts within our community. So how do regional and rural Victorians experience the mental health system? How does the challenge of stigma exist across communities? How do LGBTIQA plus people navigate a system where for our trans friends, one in two of them will attempt suicide at some point? What do we do in relation to children who are working often as carers of people within their families who are suffering from mental illness? It's a really complex and a really hard question, and that's the sort of thing.
I just need to point out, you just mentioned that the suicide toll is twice that of the road toll. That is a mind-blowing statistic. Yeah. I think there is a lot less conversation about these things, and probably because it's such a difficult topic to talk about.
Well, we do have a situation where stigma is the thing that interferes in so many people having conversations that are necessary about not being okay. Mm. And the lived experience of people who live with and suffer from the most extraordinary pain because of mental illness is a really big part of this conversation. Part of what I've been doing as Parliamentary Secretary, and I have a lived experience, I manage mental illness and my own mental health issues as well, as so many of us do, is to talk openly about that and to say that we would never expect someone with a broken leg to climb three flights of stairs without any sort of assistance. Why would we expect someone who lacks coping mechanisms because they're not well to function in the same way as everybody else and without assistance? So strength is something that I think increasingly is found in being vulnerable, and that's a game changer as far as everything we've ever been taught about stiff upper lips and all of those other sorts of being brave and taking it in the, you know, taking it in the, what's the analogy?
Pull your socks up.
Taking it on the chin.
Taking it on the chin, that's right. Mm. Yeah, and these ideas about...
taking it in the something else.
Yeah.
I'm all right with that.
I'm probably not qualified to comment. That's probably a niche market.
Yeah. It's crazy hearing you talk because I think in my own experience, you can actually forget that there are individuals and actual people doing this kind of work on a daily basis, because you see the end product or you see the discussion online and you sort of throw your two cents in here and there, but you forget to actually give that respect to the people that are putting these legislations in place and programs and having the conversations at a parliamentary
it's a hard word
level.
Nailed it.
Because you're not put into these sort of superstar roles. It's kind of humbling to hear the kind of touchstones that you pointed out, that they're all huge achievements.
Well, I think the best of Parliament happens behind the scenes. It's very easy to turn on the TV or to be walking past something and hear people screaming inside a chamber and think that that's all that politics is. And I think that that's certainly part of it. I'm in the upper house, which is known as the Red Morgue for a reason. It's not actually terribly exciting in terms of yelling and screaming, but that's actually where I feel I'm best suited. There are a lot of people in politics who, like me, are incredibly policy-driven nerds. We are policy wonks, and this is the work that many of us are aspiring to make a contribution to, whether it's family violence or voluntary assisted dying with the legislation we passed in the last parliament, whether it's the work of the Mental Health Royal Commission or how we reform our education system to create things like free TAFE. These are the sorts of things that change lives, and that takes a lot of moving parts behind the scenes.
Yeah, that you just don't realise. And so thank you for all of your work and for coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
I don't want to be uncharitable about this description, but I think politicians in the work that we do are the very, very tip of the iceberg.
Yeah,
there are so many people who campaign tirelessly for decades and decades and decades to get social change happening. And it's very easy for politicians to come along and to secure fund. Well, it's not easy to secure funding. Often it's very, very difficult and a really, really big challenge. I'm not going to lie about that. But to then come along and to give effect to social change, which has often predated them by many years, it's a real honour. And it really, I think, ties the idea of politics and parliamentary politics right back to the point of community service. It's public service.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people who's still actually trying to work out what I want to be when I grow up.
Oh, totally.
And I'm not ashamed of that. I actually think that it's really important to be perpetually curious and always wanting to find out as much as you can about the world. I'm one of those people who walks around streets looking up and around, and it's very difficult trying to have a linear conversation with me sometimes because of just so many things going on. One of the things that has consistently reminded me why I'm so privileged and so honoured to be an elected member of Parliament and an elected representative is being able to change the law in beneficial ways. So the work that we've done that failed in the last parliament because it was blocked at the last minute to change births, deaths and marriages act requirements around the nomination of gender.
Yeah.
And we're now in a position where that bill has been reintroduced. It's gone through the lower house and it's coming back up to us in the upper house.
Fantastic.
And these are things which make a real difference. When we changed the laws in 2015 to remove the more onerous punishment that existed for intentional transmission of HIV in the Crimes Act that was an inherently homophobic law. It was created at the time of the Grim Reaper advertisements, which we all remember with horror. When that was removed so that the maximum penalty was the same as a serious assault and not greater, they're the sorts of things that send a really clear message actually and symbolically around what the law can do and indeed how it should evolve. So I'm so honoured to be part of that. There are some days where you really don't get what you would like to see happen with the law, and that can be very brutal indeed. Yeah. It can be heartbreaking for people who work so hard to try to achieve outcomes that aren't possible because the numbers don't exist in the chamber. But when it does happen, when we do see change, it's the sort of thing that usually incrementally, it's the sort of thing that makes for profound improvements in people's everyday lives.
Yeah, definitely. And as we said, Harriet, your role covers Eastern Victoria. That's traditionally a more conservative part of the state. What sort of concerns do you hear about equality when you've got boots on the ground in your electorate?
Well, you're right about parts of the electorate being really conservative, but I think that's true in any part of the state. More importantly, though, we do have a changing demographic across the entire state. And you look at the election result last November, which was a really comprehensive win for Labor. That was a thorough endorsement of progressive policy. It wasn't a rejection of what conservative politics had to say. It was a recognition of the importance of not just infrastructure, because everyone has driven through level crossings that have been removed, lived and everyone has experienced the massive program of capital works that's happening in schools and roads and across the rail network around the state. But it was also about saying this is a state that is fundamentally about fairness and fundamentally about equity. And so there will always be people in every part of the state who will think that I'm a filthy lesbian who doesn't deserve to be listened to because I don't know what I'm talking about. But similarly...
Fuck those people.
Well, some days I might think that way myself. But there are increasingly younger generations who are at school now who actually don't see that that is any sort of a big deal. And it's so great. It is so great
so
to visit schools and to have kids just, you know, side-eye that kids do when they just, I'm the lamest adult that they've ever met. And it's, you know, when I talk about equality, there's almost like this curled lip because there shouldn't be a need for that conversation because it's not any sort of issue. And that's such an important thing to pick up and to recognise. And to see then the changes that have been born about through removing limitations for adoption for same-sex couples, the sorts of changes that have existed around ongoing work to recognise pride and to go through every piece of legislation to weed out to weed out discrimination. The apology that we had from the Premier, in which he said, "I want you to go out and take the hand of the person you love and take them on a tram ride." That's the most extraordinary thing you can imagine. And it's no wonder we're getting a really well-deserved reputation for being progressive, and it's just about continuing to work in that space with the goal and the focus of being inclusive of everyone, including those people who change their minds along the way. And one of the most powerful things I think to emerge in the last few years, particularly in regional areas, has been the huge number of communities and people who've reached out, often from the most extraordinarily unexpected quarters, to show love and support for same-sex couples or for young people who've come out or for gender diverse folk living in their towns, to recognize them and to say, "You are visible and we see you and we get you. We don't necessarily know why you are who you are, but that's okay. You're here and that's absolutely fine."
That's great.
We're also buying a lot of that property out there. Great. The gays are buying out
I tell
there.
You what, the gays are absolutely snapping up.
Some friends and I went to Sandy Point a few months ago for a holiday and we all decided that's our favourite new holiday spot.
Sandy Point is magnificent, but also because, and you would be aware of the amazing... I'm going to do a little plug here. We removed the so stamp duty cuts for first home buyers in regional areas, plus the first home buyers and first home builders grants in regional areas. We're seeing so many new families move to these areas, and it's challenging a lot of the old guard because we're getting kinders built, we're getting new schools, people are coming together in all sorts of different ways, and you know that's really good for everyone.
We just need a tram that runs to Sandy Point and I'll be able to do it.
Can you imagine the travel time? The travel time to Sandy Point would definitely allow you to enjoy the scenery.
Oh my God, it's like chicken and the gays all bought the property out in Dalesford, but how did they get there? Because no gays can drive.
Until the lesbians came along with the Surrey. What is it with the Surrey with the fringe on top?
Actually, on this show, we've talked a lot about visibility and being a part of the queer community. It's really important to be able to see ourselves represented basically in all aspects of life, on television, in our stories, in our podcasts, as well as in our government and in parliament. I struggle to think of many queer representatives that we have. Obviously, there's Penny Wong. We mentioned you're the first out lesbian parliamentarian in Victoria. And do you feel any sort of pressure from the community from having that position, or do you feel an obligation to be visible to others?
I had a crossroads moment when I was first elected, and actually, in fact, when I was first pre-selected, where I needed to work out what I was going to do about my identity. I actually find pride really hard, and I've had to practice my pride and to do that really honestly and really openly, because it's been something that has come to me after many, many years of self-loathing and having lost really important relationships to me and having paid a really big price. And there are so many different stories about how we come out and how we come to terms with ourselves and what the flip side of shame looks like when we finally find pride. And for me, it's been one of those journeys that has happened. I hate the term journey. It sounds like I'm on MasterChef. I know. Like RuPaul. But it's been one of those processes that I have gone through as honestly and as authentically as I possibly can, as much because I feel I owe it to my communities to do that and to be accessible and to be vulnerable. And the number of times that I've stood in the parliament and ugly cried about safe schools and burst into tears about discrimination or about what it means to have rights eroded or to have people deliberately misgender others or to have that casual homophobia and transphobia exist in the world around us, which we know in our communities hurts terribly badly, but which isn't always obvious to others outside of that bubble. So it's been something that I have done, and it hasn't been easy, you know, being completely honest about it. It's been really hard being the first out woman in the parliament, but it's a cost that I think is really important to bear because of what it will then do to make the journey easier for others. When I have people come up to me or seek me out or get in touch with my office and come in for a cuppa and say, it's so great to see people people like you. And I say, what, dog lovers? but in Parliament, and to be visible is something that I'm trying to do to give back. And I just keep practicing my pride like so many other people out there. And I keep staring down the people on the other side of the chamber who talk about how I'm an abomination and keep hoping that that will be something that over time fades to a little bit of a dull roar and then a whimper and then kind of snuffs out entirely.
Absolutely. It's difficult. Pride is difficult.
It is, yeah.
It's hard.
Not something we have a book on.
Isn't that funny? Because during the... Well, do you remember during the postal survey and everyone talked about the gay manual and we're all trying to convert people into being gay? And I just remember thinking, I grew up watching Beverly Hills 90210 every Friday night and the original, not the remake, and Melrose Place. And that was, you know, being straight was sort of at me from every angle. It didn't work on me, so I'm pretty convinced that a gay manual, no matter how beautifully written with all of the right font sizes and the most amazing graphics ever, is actually going to work. It's one of those things that we know that it's a cheap shot. We know that it's much like the discussion on freedom of religion on the one hand, which equals persecution on the other, if you called out on just how hurtful your views might be as expressed, that these are things which are knee-jerk reactions to, I think, fear of difference, fear of the world changing around the very core ideas of acceptance.
Absolutely.
Now, Australians are dealing with the possibility of a Religious Freedoms Act that could cement in law the right for religious organisations to discriminate against gay people. And one of the big concerns a lot of people have is, of course, gay students in Christian schools that are at risk of being expelled from the school if they come out. Could you explain how this new act could potentially play out and how LGBTQIA+ people could be affected from it? I mean, do we even know really what's going to be in there yet?
So firstly, what we have seen just today is an amendment to create a freedom from discrimination bill, which looks like it will go in to change the Marriage Act. There won't be a postal survey on that particular change,
nice.
Just like there wasn't a postal survey when Mr. Howard amended the Marriage Act. But one of the really interesting places that we're at publicly at the moment is the debate about the extent to which the law can reach into employment on the one hand and private life on the other. So on the one hand, we see comments by Israel Folau being tweeted and then being used as the basis to dismiss him, and we see that that's a matter that will go to the federal court now because all attempts at conciliation with the Fair Work Commission have failed. But we also see that, on the other hand, if we apply that standard across the board, then we would be seeking to regulate the way in which people talk about all manner of different things and the ramifications for their employment. So the question that remains for the court in that case is whether it was a breach of contract and indeed what the terms of the contract were. But more fundamentally, we see that there are these ideas of religious exemptions from anti-discrimination legislation, and they operate in Victoria in a range of really narrow circumstances. And one of the defences there that exists is the inherent requirements of the job. So if if, for example, you are at a school and teaching a subject which requires you to be substantively invested in that subject in terms that include morality, for example, religious belief, then in fact it might then be well argued that it's an inherent requirement of your job. The question then arises about whether someone who is a gardener in a religious school can be sacked because they are same-sex attracted or gender diverse. The questions also arise about whether students can be expelled. And I think Scott Morrison's been on the record late last year saying that he would amend the law to make sure that, I think he said gay, but I think that that's intended to include everybody as a catch-all, couldn't be expelled for their identity as same-sex attracted
and
gender diverse.
Which I think it took him 4 days to come out and say it.
That's right. There was a lot of pressure associated with that. There was also, I think, a lot of pressure around Scott Morrison needing to come out during the election, not come out.
Can you imagine?
No, needing to actually answer the question about whether he thought gay people would go to hell. And these are really difficult tactics that are employed in the course of campaigns that continue to resonate and to cause these ripple effects with people in the broader community. It may have been a cute moment to ask him about whether gays were going to go to hell and to wait for his answer and to say that it took too long. But that's causing enormous harm for our communities who already suffer and sustain enormous harm just by living in a world that treats us as different. So there's a very long answer to that one. It's a very politician's answer to that one, but the law is really complex in these areas, and that's one of the things that at a Victorian level we're also grappling with, because our state laws sit underneath the federal law, and to the extent that the federal law covers the field, it's then a really hard thing for us to tackle, and that's one of the reasons why we're doing everything that we can at a local level. It's why we have work for the Charter of Human Rights and Responsibilities to do. It's why we've got an equality minister and why we've got huge resources going into actually tackling community misinformation, but also empowering cultural change from within our rainbow communities at the same time.
So submissions for the State Royal Commission into Mental Health have just closed. What changes do you think need to happen in this area?
The Mental Health Royal Commission is another game changer as far as those really difficult social conversations. And in having a Royal Commission, it's the most independent arm of inquiry that you can have, because we didn't want it to be something that came from government. It was crucial that it be developed by the commissioners and by that expert panel in close consultation and following hundreds of hours of communication with Victorians. So the challenge will be, firstly, to identify where the areas of need are. One of the great challenges that we have is that in the system as it currently stands, and the chair of the commission, Penny Armitage, has noted this, that the system is set up in a way that it almost requires you to be sicker in order to get help.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
That it's not enough for you to be a certain degree of unwell. You have to be at a critical point before you can get help, and then you're in the acute mental health space. So how do we change that is one of the really big questions. And that's where the lived experience of people who've been in and out of the system for many, many years is a big part of saying, well, not only do we need prevention and early intervention on the one hand, and to challenge stigma there, not only do we need a workforce that is really set up and well equipped and well trained and well supported to deal with often what is very traumatic work for them, but how do we make sure that people stay in touch with the system and continue to access support within that system in a way that enables them to do everything that we would want to do in achieving a good set of outcomes for living well? So in working, for example, or in participating in community life, how do we do that against the challenges that exist at the moment? So we will implement all of those recommendations as they come back from the commission. We don't know what those recommendations will be, but the commission will release an interim report in November and then another report, a final report next year. And the work goes on to make sure that we continue to engage with industry and with the peak bodies in hospital and healthcare, as well as the workforce, as well as people in our communities, while that work goes on, because we have to also remember that there are some incredibly good things happening to make sure that people have that quality of life, and to make sure that everyone from carers to workers to people who work within the system in hospital and health administration are doing to make the best of the environments that they work in currently.
Book now at the lunch room. 9495-6261. But it's true. That really strikes a chord with me. I work in mental health at a psychology practice. And I think I said it before, we had an episode entirely about mental health. There's this kind of feeling or common thought process that you shouldn't or don't need to seek help until you're in a crisis. And being the other person, the person on the other end of the phone, when you receive that phone call, it's such a difficult scenario to be of any use. You know, there's waiting lists, there's it's just like it's almost too late. But I really like the idea of changing the conversation and saying, like, these services should be available to people all the time and people should be taking it up.
And I think encouraging people to come in, and even when you're feeling well.
I absolutely believe some of the best work for your own mental health is done when you are well. And for your own sort of mental practices and your coping mechanisms and the things you can really take on board and make changes to your behaviors happen when you're well and things are stable. It's just, unfortunately, the conversation we have is people aren't really seeking help when they're well.
Or we don't talk about it.
Or we don't talk about it.
Well, stigma is, again, it's such an insidious theme in this conversation, in the same way that with family violence, it was considered to be something that happened behind closed doors and was therefore a dirty little secret for a family or a street or for a workplace to have to sweep under the carpet. And as far as mental health is concerned, Lifeline says it best when they say, we want you to call us on your bad days and not your worst day, or not just your worst day. And we need to make sure that we're treating mental health in a way that recognises not just the importance of ongoing care and support, but if we want to couch it in economic terms, the Productivity Commission is looking at a series of reports and pieces of research that look into the early intervention and what that means for the healthcare dollar. That if you invest well in improving health outcomes, whether they're physical or mental, down the track, the dividends are enormous. And when we provide assistance for people to, again, build the tools that they have to manage stress or to build resilience or to have a more connected life, we then equip them with tools to have conversations when they're not doing so well. And that's, again, another challenge for the Royal Commission, that the NDIS, for example, is a system that's not set up for episodic issues around mental health, that, again, you have to be at a certain level of disability, an arbitrarily determined idea of what that looks like in order to get assistance. And so, therefore, too many people are being excluded, and that has very, very real ramifications, not just for somebody's ability to navigate that particular episode or period in their lives, but for them then not seeking help again because they see it as a futile exercise.
Thank you so much once again, not only for the work that you do, but for coming in and chatting to us.
It's been fantastic. Tonight. I genuinely could sit here and listen to you talk all day. It's absolutely
Do you want to just take over the next few episodes or we'll just listen?
Yeah, I'd love to hang out again. That would be really
we definitely should get you back
There's
to have another
chat. There's a lot to talk about. Yeah, anything I can ever help with, just sing out. I love a bit of a chat, and if I can have a chat with my people, then all the better.
Yeah,
wonderful. Absolutely. And what would you recommend the best way to get in touch with you, Harriet, if someone in the community ever wanted to do so?
Absolutely. If anyone would ever like to contact me, my email address is harriet.shing, like fishing or washing or furnishing, at parliament.vic.gov.au. I also have a Twitter handle, which is Shing V World, as in Harriet Shing versus the world. I know it's not very parliamentary, but I refuse to change it.
It's great.
I'm also on Facebook as well. So please do feel free to get in touch. There's a lot in my social media that relates as much as anything to dogs. to dancing animals and to things that are full of joy, because I'm all about a bit of sunshine too.
You're getting the light in the dark.
I like shades of grey, which then segues me briefly into what I'm going to also put in a plug, which is for retired and ex-racing greyhounds and the many greyhounds that are up for adoption. I wouldn't be able to keep doing my job if it weren't for the giant slug bear horses that are currently upside down on my couch at home. The LGBTIQA plus communities have the most amazing record for pet ownership. You only have to go to Midsummer to see Dr. Hugh Worth or anyone else lining up for the best dog in show competition.
Who's Polly's Dog Show. That's
yes, Polly's Dog Show. And it's one of those things. So I think that one of the highlights for me at Midsummer this year, firstly, the hugging mums. Big shout out to the hugging mums.
I got teary.
I got so teary. Yeah. I was just walking around howling and hugging every mum I could find and going back for seconds and thirds. And they're like, well,
are they just people dishing out?
Yeah, there were a few dozen of these amazing mums who went around Midsummer.
They went to a lot of the marches for marriage equality as well, which was beautiful.
And just provided hugs to anyone who needed them. And there were so many of them who were completely tear-stained by, you know, their shoulders were drenched by our salty tears by the end of the day. But the dogs were the other side of the coin. The utter joy of dogs dressed up in rainbow paraphernalia is something that makes my heart sing every time. So big plug for adopted greyhounds or any sort of rescue there.
And sounds like you've got quite a bit of space at your house, but you don't need a lot of space for greyhounds as well. People seem to think that you need to have lots of space for them to run. They're happy with a walk or two a day.
There's a lot. That's an excellent point. There's a lot of greyhounds, in fact, that live in apartments. And they're
good apartment
when
dogs.
When I first got into greyhounds, back in the day when I got into greyhounds, I remember asking a bloke down at the local park what his greyhound was like. And he said, I live in an apartment. And when I first got the dog, I was worried that she'd be really bored. And so he set up one of those nanny cams.
Oh, yeah.
And the course of the day, that's right. So it was like paranormal activity. It was paranormal inactivity.
Oh, yeah. Right.
So in essence, for the whole time, so he left and the dog went for one circuit around the apartment, had a drink of water, went to the couch and fell asleep.
Wow.
And then fast forward until just before he got home when the dog gets up and goes to the door. That's literally what they do. So after any sort of 15-second run, they will need a recovery period of at least 22 hours, which is just like me on the sports field.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
lovely
so much.
We'll see you soon.
Thank you so much.
And so we're back again to the end of the show.
Back from space. So nice to see you, boys.
It's fun being back.
Very nice.
So don't forget to follow us on the old Instagram at GaysRevoltingPod or join our Facebook group and spill some hot tea at the Gays Are Revolting.
So enthusiastic.
I know, I just lost all my energy at the end of that sentence, so it was weird.
And of course, we have our live show coming up on July 19th the Brunswick Mechanics Institute, and we are pretty much sold out. There's only a few tickets left, so you can jump on our socials and get the link for that.
Get
if you want to come
tickets.
And visit us and say hello. And
we'll be there.
Yeah, we might. And while you are buying those tickets, sign up to our Patreon. We release an after show every episode now, so we get a little mini-sode each week. If you can't bear to live without us,
it's
get the extra content.
A coffee
for us and transport. So for this week's after show, we're going to be talking about relationship roles and
role play.
Well, I mean, we can get there, but like I know
the roles that I've been trying to lose off my stomach.
Back roles.
Oh, back roles. One of the questions that I absolutely hate getting from people that you just meet when you're in a relationship or with someone, who is the girl and who is the boy? Don't you hate that?
I love when people ask me that.
And I was like, well, you see, the funny thing is about being gay is we're both boys.
I say I'm the psychotic dog that it fucks.
Well, we'll talk about all that and more on our after show.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.